Cool.
How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great.
Excellent, excellent. So,
you?
Well, okay. The best day, but I've been keeping my mind off of things by watching Schitt's Creek, which,
Oh yeah,
I feel like I'm a little late to the game on that one, but it's pretty awesome. It's a very good show, very funny. It's just really good all around. So
if you haven't seen it, it's new to you.
Definitely a must watch. So, Laura,
speaking
Desiree,
of must watches, hold on.
Wait, what?
Speaking of what you should watch, we're watching Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks, the new one or the old one?
I'm watching the old one right now.
And
it is trippy, man. That's the easiest way I can explain it. It's like creepy. It's scary, like psychologically.
I've always heard it was good. Like, it's like a cult classic, you know?
Absolutely. It's really messed up, though.
Really?
Oh, man. It'll make your skin crawl. It's awesome.
Seriously?
Seriously. You should give it a shot. It might freak you the fuck out, for real.
No, I always thought it was like a soap opera with, like, creepy things happening.
Yeah.
Is that basically what it is?
Pretty much.
Yeah. That's kind of what I thought.
Yeah, it's great. Anyway, Schitt's Creek.
Schitt's Creek is great. It's very well written. It has casual homosexuality, which you don't see a lot on TV. And David and Patrick are the cutest fucking couple that I have ever seen in my life. And I'm obsessed. So
I'll just go on the record and say I love gay people.
Yeah. So it's a fabulous, fantastic show. It just ended. So they're all on Netflix. Watch them. That's my spiel. Anyway. So, I am Laura Dedrick, and with me, as always, is my brother.
Hey, I'm Michael Moffitt. You can call me Lee.
He's Lee. Okay, so we got a crazy one for you guys today. We're talking about old Israel Keyes. So this guy is quite a character. This one's probably going to be a bit of a long one, but we're going to get started.
He's a difficult one. He's hard to stay positive about.
It's incredibly hard to stay positive about. Where, as always, we're going to try to keep it light as we go through this, but always
it ain't gonna happen.
Respectful. This guy is creepy. Creeptastic. He makes my skin crawl. So let's talk about him. So
yeah.
I'm going to start on June 9th, 2011 in Essex, Vermont. So Bill and Lorraine Currier didn't show up for work that day, and since both had been at their respective jobs for over 20 years, this raised immediate alarm with those close to the couple. You know, Bill and Lorraine, they were 49 and 55. They had just celebrated their 25th wedding anniversary before they were reported missing, and you know, they were just a happy, normal couple by all accounts. And Bill worked in the university in Vermont as a lab assistant, and Lorraine at the medical center. So when police arrive at the Currier residence, the doors and windows are locked, their car is gone, and the window in the garage that led into the house has been broken. Nothing else appeared to have been taken or disturbed, and their stuff was left. Their medicine, their clothes, their eyeglasses. So this is obviously out of character for them to just pack up and leave, especially without any of their shit, you know, so they started searching for him and they didn't find much. So
no.
Yeah. So they did have a small break in the case when an eyewitness came forward saying that he saw them being driven away in their own car the night before they were reported missing. So this witness was actually able to provide a description of the driver, which led to the release of a composite sketch. Okay.
Basically a tall white guy.
It's a tall white guy is all they know. And the sketch is terrible. Did you see?
Don't look at me.
It's a real bad sketch. But yeah, that's all they have. And it didn't lead to much, and the case was getting cold, and unfortunately they started losing hope, and the investigators and family started to fear the worst. So during this time that the Currier's case was looking like it would never be solved, In Anchorage, Alaska, in February of 2012, 18-year-old Samantha Koenig is working her shift at a roadside coffee stand as a barista. This poor girl.
This is terrible. This is one of the worst things I've ever heard in my life.
This is rough. So she's working, you know, the roadside stand as a barista. She's alone. She's 18. Her boyfriend is coming to pick her up after her shift. When he gets there, she's not there. So for several hours after her disappearance, though, her boyfriend receives a text from her phone saying, basically, I'm done. I'm going on vacation. I'm tired. I'm going away for a while. And Sam's boyfriend and her father knew that this was just bullshit. This is not something that she would have said or done. And immediately rose suspicion, and they knew that the person on the other end of the phone wasn't Samantha.
Yeah, they're not stupid.
Right. I mean,
it's pretty obvious that, you know, something happened, and to get cryptic texts like that, I mean, people who know the person, actually know the person,
yeah,
would immediately red flag.
I'm not sure what he thought he was getting away with.
He thinks that he can get away with literally anything.
He does.
He thinks that he is the most powerful man in existence.
We'll get to him.
I'm sorry.
No. We got plenty to say.
I'm jumping ahead.
I'm
excited.
it's exciting. Okay. So, they get the text. They know it's not her. But there was actually security camera footage in the coffee stand. And law enforcement was able to kind of piece together what happened to Samantha. So she was working alone that night. It was dark and cold and snowing. You know, we're in Alaska. The stand was right along the highway, but with the snowy, like, crappy conditions, people driving by weren't really paying much attention to the stand. So around 8 p.m., a man walks up to this coffee stand and he's wearing a ski mask. But, you know, it's Alaska. It's cold. It's not
sure.
It's not too crazy, isn't it? You know? So it doesn't really raise alarm in Samantha. So he comes up, he seems normal, asks for coffee. In the video, you can see she just calmly appears to start making coffee. She seems calm. She turns around, and in the video, she just throws her hands up. So she turns around basically to a gun in her face and
yeah,
a voice demanding that she turn off the lights in the coffee shack. So he then leans into the coffee stand, zip ties her hands behind her back. He jumps into the stand through the window, grabs her, takes her outside, and eventually they're out of range of the security camera.
Yeah, he's very meticulous.
We will find.
I'll give him that.
Absolutely. This guy is fucking methodical. Like, we'll get to it. Like, he's so meticulous, methodical. Just bad shit.
I can't wait to get to it.
Yeah. Bad shit crazy. So, okay. So, after Samantha's disappearance, her father, her boyfriend, the whole community, it was a very tight-knit community. They all rallied. They put up posters all over Alaska. They held vigils. They searched for her poor father. He's publicly pleads for her kidnapper to bring her home. And it's just, I watched that video and he's just heartbroken.
I can't imagine. I have not seen that in just...
poor guy.
God.
So he gets another text message from her. This one says that she is alive, and it tells her boyfriend, it directs him to a ransom note that had been placed in a nearby park. So the text message said, Connor Park sign under pick of Albert Purdy. So, Connor Park was actually a park in nearby in Anchorage. So her boyfriend and her dad run to the park. They find a picture of a missing dog named Albert, and under the picture was a plastic bag with pieces of paper in it. The family actually called the authorities, and who took this in as evidence. So that's weird.
Yeah.
Just really fucking with them, you know, like with the dog and ain't she pretty and okay, but anyway.
Yeah, he's having fun. He's getting his rocks off.
He's having a lot of fun with this. So they actually, in the bag, there's a blurry picture of what law enforcement think is Samantha. So they have her dad verify. And he says, yeah, that, you know, that's her. But there's something off in the picture. He said her hair was in a braid, and her hair, she never wore her hair in a braid. So they all thought that was kind of weird, you know, whatever. But it was her. And in the picture, she's holding a recent edition of the newspaper. So they think she is alive. She's alive. And then this is a ransom note. The kidnapper, he demands $30,000 for the safe return of her. And he wanted it deposited into her account. So, you know, working with law enforcement, Samantha's father deposited $5,000. It's like, okay, we'll give you $5,000. But they knew this was the best way to kind of like lure him out of hiding, because they knew he would use that fucking car. So.
Oh, yeah.
Just a few hours later, Sam's card was used in Anchorage. And then it was used a few more times in Anchorage. Then several days later, it was used in Arizona. So we went from Alaska to Arizona in just a few days.
Yep.
So this guy, he's always one step ahead. He uses the drive-through ATMs for quick transactions. He wears a mask, a hood, gloves, yada, yada. He makes another withdrawal in Arizona, then New Mexico and Texas. Like, this guy's on a trip.
What we'll learn about Keys is that he kind of gets off on being patient.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, the whole time waiting.
Yeah.
That's his excitement.
Yeah.
He's not like other serial killers.
No. No, he's not like any I've ever... No.
And I know that he was, like, inspired or whatever by Bundy.
Mm-hmm.
He said... who did he say that was, like, a punk for apologizing for all the kills?
Oh, I don't know.
I think it was the Green River Killer.
Oh, possibly.
No, it was the BTK.
Oh. Oh, God. We got to do that fucking asshole.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
This guy's pretty much the same thing.
He's... Yeah. As far as, like, double lives, like... Okay. Well, yeah. Double lives for sure. So, okay. So, finally, they catch a break. The ATM footage shows the guy driving away in a Ford Focus. A white Ford Focus. So they put out an APB throughout the whole Southwest looking for this white Ford Focus. That's all they got. There's a white guy and a white Ford Focus. So soon after that, in Texas, a state trooper sees the Ford Focus. It fits the description of the kidnapper's vehicle. They kind of waits and until he makes, you know, a traffic violation so he can properly stop him, which is nice. But the guy in the Ford has been waiting for this. He's ready.
Yeah.
He's not planning on going quietly. He's going out in a blaze of glory. But on this day, he doesn't have his gun on him. So that didn't work. But, I mean, that poor trooper, he had no clue how close he came to, like, dying that day. But anyway.
Yeah.
In the Focus, the law enforcement finds everything. They find Samantha's card, her cell phone, cash, a .22 pistol, and the disguises that match the footage on the ATM, but no Samantha. So,
yeah.
This suspect isn't talking yet, and the man the trooper pulled over is Israel Keys. What a fucker.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we delve into his background a bit?
Yes, please.
Okay, so, Israel Keys, you know, was born on January 7th, 1978. This isn't an old case. This is, you know, fairly recent. So he was born in 1978 in Cove, Utah. He was actually from a big Mormon family. He was one of 10 siblings, and their parents just basically cut them off from the outside world. No electricity, no phones. They were all homeschooled. By the age of 5, his family moved to Washington State. And soon after that, his parents kind of left the Mormon faith. They actually started going to a church called the Ark, and that church preached Christian identity theology, which is basically white supremacy disguised as Christianity. So, yeah.
We were told, she's supposed to supposedly switched her religions back and forth like she's switching shoes.
Yeah. She was
when she was young.
Very into religion.
Yeah.
But that's how he was, you know, kind of brought up, like, the white was a superior race. And then for a while, when he left home, he dabbled in Satanism, but I think that was probably just to piss his dad off. There's that. But, you know, he would grow up to be a serial killer, a rapist, an arsonist, a burglar, and even a bank robber.
Let's not forget necrophiliac.
Oh, as well, yes.
I'm sorry.
No,
you're right. I hate to drop that bomb.
Oh, God, the necrophilia bomb. Ugh. So, he eventually graduated to rape and murder, obviously. And later, when law enforcement asked him why he did this, he would reply, "Why not?" He had a lot to say.
Why not?
Why not?
Why not? He has the opportunity to do it. He doesn't see any other reason why not to.
Yep. It's just, you know, why not? So one of the special agents that spent some time with him, you know, in interrogations and things like that, he said, and I quote, "I spent a lot of time with Israel Keyes. You could be in a room with him, and it was like you were in a room with your neighbor. And then there were other times where the hair on the back of your neck stands up a little bit." So he was a fucking creeper.
Yeah.
But at the time of his arrest, the only brush with the law that he had had was a DUI. So that's like a rite of passage. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for real.
That's not, as far as things go, that's
considered
big a deal.
Like a clean record.
That's not that big a deal.
Almost.
So, not to condone that. I'm just saying.
No.
Comparison.
Drinking, driving.
It's fine.
Bad.
So. Yeah. He eventually was extradited back to Alaska from Texas, and initially he was very withdrawn. He didn't want to give a lot away, but he loves to talk about himself and his crimes. He is one of those. He talked about himself. He loved reliving it. He was just giving enough information to the investigators to kind of keep them interested without giving them any details about any of his previous skills.
He's the biggest douchebag that you know times 20.
He is. Especially, like, at the end, I'll kind of go over some more of his, like, douchebaggery. But,
okay.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, law enforcement learns a little bit more about him. They learn he lives a quiet life and with his girlfriend and his 10-year-old daughter in Anchorage. He spent a few years in the military. He served a tour in Egypt. He didn't see any action, but he received a medal and an honorable discharge. And was currently working as a construction worker contractor.
And yeah, he didn't make a peep while he was in the military or anything.
No.
No one suspected a damn thing.
Nobody suspected anything. He was a normal, nice guy. One of those, you know, oh, he was so quiet. I would have never thought that. But
and that was around, okay, like 2001, right?
He was around, yes. So
that'd be like right at 9/11.
Yeah.
He missed the perfect opportunity to get all of his rage out. Like, he could have mass murdered a lot of people. He could have taken advantage of that situation. Instead, he murdered innocent people.
Yeah. So he actually admitted in an audio interview in 2012, he said, "I would do something and then I would go back like business as usual and go out with my friends, go out to bars. You know, for all the years they've known me, they actually don't know me at all, really." So,
yeah.
They searched his home. They took his computer. They found searches relating to the disappearance of Samantha Koenig on there. So that's kind of a red flag. And with all this, you know, mounting against him, all the evidence, the police lay it out. They're like, "We know you kidnapped Samantha. We just want you to talk." And at this point, they still have hope that she's possibly alive, you know?
Yeah, so, they're clinging to it.
They're clinging to it real bad. And they say the two words that they dread to hear, he says, "She's dead." So, unfortunately, he had killed her. And okay.
How do you begin with this?
This is rough. Okay. So, after admitting to killing Samantha, Keyes told law enforcement that he dismembered her body, cut a hole in the ice at Lake Matanuska, and dropped the body parts into the freezing water. This took 3 trips. Okay? So he did all of this under the guise of ice fishing. So there were a bunch of guys on the lake. They were all ice fishing. So he just kind of pretended he was fishing, but he didn't pretend he fished. He actually admitted that while disposing of her body, he did do a little fishing.
And oh yeah, he did quite a bit of fishing.
He did,
actually,
he did some fishing, and he brought the fish home and cooked them for his family.
Yeah, he's feeding them to the kids, the little fishes that were just nibbling on the corpses.
Like, what the fuck? That's crazy. Like, that was just crazy to me.
It's pretty crazy.
But he told her where to find Samantha. They found her. She was underwater right where he said she was. So at this point, he's on a roll. And yeah, he's going to give law enforcement a shit ton of information about Samantha. So,
unfortunately, he's got him right where he wants him. He does. Which is always where he is.
Absolutely.
He's always in that position.
100%. He is, until, for the most part, he is always one step ahead of them. He's always in control. And when he loses that control, he flips shit. So he says that after he took Samantha from the coffee stand, he brought her back to his house and tied her up in his shed. The balls on this dude. So, mind you, now his daughter and his girlfriend are asleep in the house during this time. He said that his girlfriend and his daughter knew to stay out of the shed, so it was kind of like a man cave situation.
Yeah, which, okay, I'm gonna go on the record. If you're married to a husband and he has a man cave and he's like forbids you to go into it, you might want to check it out.
Red fucking flag, man. Like, what? No.
Deep rule it. Check it out. See what it's about.
I mean,
I don't know. Get yourself out of there.
Right. No, it's crazy. Like, my husband has zero privacy. I can't imagine him being like, don't go in there. I'm like, bullshit.
I haven't had privacy since 2007.
Right?
Yeah.
You have a kid. It's even worse.
Yeah.
So, he brought her back to their house. The girlfriend's there. So anyway, he turns up the music in his murder man cave to drown out the sound of poor Samantha's screams. And at this point, he's telling her, he's like, you know, I'll keep you alive. I'll let you go. But
he's telling her all she wants to hear.
All she wants to hear, which is makes this so much worse.
Yeah.
And then he rapes her, strangles her to death, and stuffs her body in a box and leaves it in his man shed cave. Murder thing.
Yeah, he puts it in bags. He triple bags it, and he's got three bags, all of her body parts, and he cut them all off with a utility knife.
Oh my gosh. So, but this is really crazy. So the next day, the day after he kills Sam in his fucking garage, he takes his family on a cruise to the Caribbean for 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. He's got a dead girl in his garage. So, like, talk about a double life. He could seamlessly switch between a normal upstanding citizen and father to a cold-blooded psychopath like it was nothing. And that is terrifying to me.
Yep.
So, they got back from, you know, their long Caribbean vacation. And he had found that, you know, not surprisingly, Samantha's body was frozen solid in the Alaskan weather.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that getting rid of a frozen body wasn't the ideal situation, so he thawed her. He found some makeup to make her look more alive, braided her hair, and took a picture of her with a newspaper. So the picture...
Put makeup on her, yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah. She was dead in that picture. The whole time they were thinking she was alive, she was dead. And I was watching this documentary on YouTube, and this girl brought up a very interesting point. So where did he get the makeup? Like, did he just take it from his girlfriend and use it on a dead girl and then put it back?
He probably bought it. He probably knows all about makeup.
So he did this for years. For years. Yeah. Like... He was like a normal guy, and
that he
claims.
Yeah.
So, you know, he just seemed like another guy. No one suspected anything. Thought he was normal, nice dude. you know, it's one of those I would have never suspected him. So kills for over a decade claiming.
I'm sorry, Laura doesn't want to say this, but I'm going to say it. He has sex with the dead body and she's frozen solid. I don't know how that's even possible, but it's gross. Yeah. And it's bad.
It's bad.
It's hard to mention.
It is hard to mention.
So I'm sorry I mentioned
it. No, it had to be mentioned.
It did.
It did.
People got to know how sick this guy is.
He's a real sick, sick person. So, but you know,
I'm sorry.
I'm just like thinking, okay, I could say so many things that I don't want to be disrespectful. So let's just move on.
Yeah, I've got a couple bits lined up. I'm not going to use them.
You know, it's like she's 18. I'm not doing that. So he said that he finally said that he would cooperate with the law in exchange for a deal. He wanted an execution date and he wanted it within a year. So this began a huge cat and mouse game between him and law enforcement. And, you know, Keyes really kept them right where he wanted them the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
He only gave them little bits of information, you know, and in exchange for, and I get this, Starbucks Americanos, which are fucking delicious.
What are those?
It's just a fancy coffee. It's like a $7 coffee. I don't know. It's got like foamy stuff in it. I don't know, but it's good. And he would want Americanos from Starbucks. Sounds good. Snickers bars and cigars.
Yeah, peanut butter Snickers bars.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, I just lost all respect for him, then.
Yeah.
Gross. Okay.
Eat Reese's, you weirdo.
Yeah. Eat Reese's or Snickers.
You sick fuck.
But, you know, after his cigars and everything, he really only talked about how he killed people, not like who or where. So he just loved, you know, reliving the gory details of his crimes, and he still had law enforcement right where he wanted them.
Yeah.
So one day, you know, after getting his cigar and his Americano, he decided to give a little information about the disappearance of Bill and Lorraine Currier. So that was the couple that we talked about in the beginning that just kind of disappeared without a trace. But in order for him to give this information, he demanded that they share nothing with the media, do not share his name, do not share anything that he confessed. And he said that he didn't want the media knowing because he didn't want his daughter to know.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know that was the reason. I thought he was just like even more selfish than that.
No, he didn't want his daughter to know that he was a fucking psycho killer. And quote, get this. He's like, I don't want this to turn into some kind of true crime bullshit.
Yeah. Which is exactly what he wanted.
Which is, I'll explain a little more later, but yeah, I'm not gonna give him what he wants, except for,
no, you know, we're making fun of him, right, instead of giving him the glory that he thought he needed. Yeah. You know,
very narcissistic, totally crazy. So
we're destroying this asshole.
He actually confessed to murdering the couple. He told them he dumped their bodies in an abandoned farmhouse just a few miles from their house. So how crazy is that? Like, law enforcement in Essex, Vermont was just, they had just given up hope of finding the couple. And there they are, just like miles from their house, he says, like in an abandoned farmhouse. So they arrive at the location the law enforcement does. The farmhouse is gone. Okay. So it had been torn down a few months before and the bodies were supposedly in the basement. The whole structure was demolished and taken to a landfill. So that's convenient.
Their bodies were never recovered.
No. And the only way, they looked for these bodies for a long time in the landfill and they never found them. But they did, they started to ask him questions that only the killer would know to try to pin it on him. So he said, you know, he spoke to this investigator, actually spoke to Keyes on the phone, trying to get more information out of him about Bill and Lorraine. And Keyes told Billy that he wasn't sorry, had no remorse for killing the couple. He was cold and very matter of fact. So just like real psycho shit. So, but it did turn out that Keyes knew everything about the Currier case, the crime scene, the murders. He said that he cut the phone line, broke into the garage, which is consistent with the crime scene. He said, yeah, I decided I was going to look for a house with a couple in it. I was looking for a fairly easy way to get into the garage, and theirs was the first house I found that had all of those things.
Oh. Yeah, He didn't really hunt people. No. He hunted locations.
He hunted locations. And we'll talk about that when we get to the kill kits.
Okay.
Super. I don't know why, but like kill cachet kill is like so cool to me. I don't know. It just sounds good. It's a terrible, terrible thing.
If anybody finds one of these kill things, I mean, they got $5,000 in them.
Do they really?
Yeah, they're scattered all over the place. Who knows where they are?
I didn't think about that. I thought it was just, you know, like, I'll like trash bags.
I mean, there's also, you know, killing stuff you can use. Oh, but yeah. I wouldn't use that. I just use the cash.
That'd be good. I'm sure they're still looking for a lot of those kill kits. I'm sure they're everywhere.
They're my tools. They're just my tools.
I like to bind and be bound. I need my tools.
It's fetish shit.
Oh, God.
It's always sunny.
We have used ourselves. Do what?
It's always sunny is always good.
It's always sunny is always good. So, he is now in the courier's house. He goes into their bedroom. He's wearing a headlamp and he has a pistol. He ties the couple up with zip ties and he tells them that he's kidnapping them. He's not going to kill them. He's going to kidnap them. He takes them to their own car and drives them to the farmhouse. He brought Bill into the basement. He was tied up. He then rapes Lorraine while Bill is listening in the other room. Oh, my God. That is so awful. So
yeah.
Bill manages to escape and obviously tries to save his wife. And that's when Keys shoots him dead in the basement. He sexually assaults Lorraine some more, brings her down to the basement, and eventually strangles her.
Shoots him 10 times.
Yeah. Well, yeah. He covers the bodies in Drano, wraps them in plastic bags, and shoves them under some junk in the basement of the farmhouse. And even, like, the demolition crew tearing down the farmhouse, they said that the smell of decomposition was so bad they didn't even investigate inside before they tore it down. So it was, like, not my problem. I guess, why would you, you know, I guess.
We're just going to leave the grave here.
We're just going to leave it here. It's, like, not my problem.
Let's just put a tombstone here, because there's obviously a corpse.
I mean, I'm hoping they thought it was, like, a deer or something, but how is it? Come on. Like, come on. Somebody dropped the ball that day.
Oh, man.
So anyway,
a lot of balls were dropped.
Balls were dropped in this whole story. So the farmhouse was demolished. It was dumped along with the bodies. Like you said, they took a really long time looking for it. 12 weeks they combed through the landfill looking for Bill and Lorraine, and they never found them.
No, that's the saddest part.
Very sad. And when Keys found out the farmhouse was demolished, he left. Actually, I watched a fair amount of his confession tapes, and he laughs a lot.
Really? It's 6 hours, man, on YouTube.
Oh, I didn't watch the whole. I can watch the whole thing, but he laughs a lot, and that pissed me off.
There's like 10 minutes of him just sitting there and looking bored, and I'm just like, why can't they just shut the cameras off for 1 second and just take a chair, just beat the shit out of him right now?
No, they gave him coffee and talked like him like he was a normal person. Like it was.
They're giving him foot rubs and all that shit.
He's got it made in the shade because he's not given any information, just enough information to keep him there, you know?
Yeah.
Ugh.
I'm impressed at the resilience of the law enforcement.
I am too. Well, I saw that one of the officers said, he's like, I got in a screaming match with him. He's like, because I was just tired of being yelled at by a serial killer. And I just, I love that. I was like, I'm just sick of this shit. I don't need to take this from you. You're a serial killer.
Yeah, let me put you in your place.
Right, let me just put you in your place for a second. So, he confessed to, you know, the brutal murder of the couple. He said that he had never met them before. He picked their house because they had no dog, no kids, and easy entry to the house. So, wrong place, wrong time. Like you said, he doesn't hunt people. He hunts places.
Right.
So, he had a super regimented system. He would travel far away, preferably to like a small town with a low crime rate, turn off his phone and only use cash. He was super good at covering his tracks. He would kidnap, kill, and then be several hundred miles away the next day before anyone knew like his victim was even missing. He was slick.
He was
super organized.
He was good. He was good at waiting.
Yeah.
I'm going to give him that because he's not a genius.
No.
He's not, you know, the greatest serial killer who ever lived. He is a piece of shit.
Yeah.
and he's just really good at waiting.
He's calculated. I mean, he's really organized. Like, the Courier murders, he flew from Anchorage, Alaska to Chicago, Illinois. From Chicago, he drove a rental car 1,000 miles to Vermont. Then after the murders, he drove 200 miles to drop the murder weapon in a lake. And then he drove back to Chicago, hopped a plane back home to Alaska. So, like, and he flew under his own name every single time he flew. So they were able to trace him all over North America, basically.
The cojones.
Yeah, big time. His own name. Crazy. So, how did he pay for all this? Well, he robbed banks, yeah. He was a bank robber too. And I put
in his words, he's the leader of his gang. Which I don't believe. I'm pretty sure that he low on the totem pole.
Yeah, I mean, he robbed banks. It wasn't anything special. He robbed banks, and the security footage is him with a mask on, you know. So, but for years, like leading up to the Courier murders, he would travel across the U.S., fly in, fly out, drive far, you know, using his name. He would prepare for his murders years in advance. Like you said, he waited. He waited.
Mm-hmm.
He buried his kill cat kits all across the United States, or kill caches, as I like to call them.
Hey.
Claimed that there were at least 5 that we know of. We found 5. There's one in New York, Texas, Wyoming, Alaska. The 5th one, get this, buried in Essex, Vermont, 2 years before the murder of the Courier couple.
Oh, yeah. So I believe that. He's that fucking crazy.
Yeah. And, like, what's in a kill kit? We got duct tape, shovels, guns, rope, Drano, lye, trash bags. You said how much money?
It varied, I'm pretty sure. But I think he usually kept about $5,000 in there.
$5,000. So, yeah, basically everything, you know, like an up-and-coming serial killer would need on the go.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
In an emergency, like, he had everything there. He didn't have to waste any time getting everything, because everything's all there.
Right. Yeah.
He'd cut the power. He cut the phone lines. And then he'd be in control.
Yeah. And, I mean, he was a trained soldier. Like, that, I'm sure that factored in.
That had a big part.
Yeah.
Yeah, big time.
You overpower, you dominate, and you take control. And that's what he did.
Mm-hmm.
But
he was probably the perfect soldier.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure he was. So he, you know, he's all over the country. He's planning these kill kits, planning future murders. He says he has 11 all over the country. So he kind of worked backwards, you know, going to his kill kit, and then finding the random target to kill near that kit. So, yeah. Scoping the locations. So, they found a kill kit. The one they found in Wyoming had no DNA, which is crazy. But the one they found in Vermont had a perfect thumbprint of his. And he was pissed. He was so pissed. He was upset that he slipped and lost control. And this was at this time, the Vermont police released his name and all the details surrounding the case.
Yep.
Which he did not want them to do. So, yay!
Which he did, in a way.
He
knew that his story would get out eventually. He just didn't want to be on his terms.
Yes. No, I agree with that. But he did shut down for a while with law enforcement. He stopped asking for his Americanos, so it was pretty serious, you know?
Yeah.
He loves to talk about his hobby, and he just loves to talk. So he finally started talking again. And he was around 18 years old. He told them about his first attempted murder. So he was about 18 years old at the time, and he lived in Oregon. He was working along this river in Oregon that was like a popular like tubing floating area, which we're familiar with that because we live here in the Ozarks. And
area,
we floated down the river before.
Yeah.
So this was a floating area, and he worked there, and he happened to notice that a young girl was with a group of her friends, and the girl had gotten kind of behind her friends floating down the river, which is like classic rookie mistake. she got out of sight of her friends. Keys waded into the water and grabbed her. He then took her to the bathroom, bound her, and raped her.
He's like Jason Voorhees.
He is like Jason Voorhees.
Hopping out of the fucking water.
He did intend to kill her, but he said she wouldn't shut up. So, I dig this girl, by the way. She did exactly what she was supposed to do in the situation. She talked a lot. She asked Keith questions. She told him personal things about herself in an attempt to humanize herself, and it worked. He let her go.
That's awesome.
That's crazy. So, but he was disgusted with himself about this, and he promised never to let another one get away. But this woman has never come forward. So I don't know if she doesn't want to, or if she's never connected it, or if she's dead, or you know what I mean? Or if it never happened. Who knows? But he said, once I started, you know, there was nothing like it. When he asked why he picked his victims, he said, I didn't. It was just random.
Yeah. So, and that's true. I believe that.
Very true. Yeah.
Like a roll of the dice. He just wanted to kill some people.
Yeah, he did. And the reason why he avoided custody so long is because he got familiar with like law enforcement procedures. He would cross state lines into different jurisdictions. And Ted Bundy did that too. Like he'd sprinkle, you know, evidence here and then he'd cross the state line and then drop off a shoe and shit like that. So It wasn't until he struck close to home and killed Samantha that he got caught. So I think he was so patient and everything, but I think it took over. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I think
you think he's in the berserker phase?
Yes. He's unraveling. Like he's like, I'm doing this on my home turf because I absolutely have to kill somebody.
Yeah.
So you know, like he never showed any remorse. Like I said, he's believed to have killed as many as 11 people, but he kept all of the necessary information about the murders to himself. But so this is creepy. They found in his cell there were these pieces of paper. There were 11 individual pieces of paper with skulls drawn on the paper in Key's own blood. So like what? But so they're thinking that these 18 skulls that he drew with his own blood symbolize the 11 pieces of paper with the skulls on them symbolize 11 victims, but they don't know that for sure. So
yeah,
I just thought it was really creepy that he drew it in his own blood.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah. He's a freak.
He is pretty freaky. I guess that's not really that freaky compared to some of the shit he does.
Yeah, that's true.
They even, like, thought that maybe he started killing earlier than he said. And he said at one point that after his daughter was born, he couldn't hurt children. So nobody's quite sure if that means he couldn't hurt children anymore or he could never hurt children. There's
because usually serial killers, they start with the younger ones, right?
Well, I feel like I guess it just depends on your profile, but this guy has no profile.
No,
you know
that's
what I mean?
What's so fucked up.
Except for the kill kits, he has no like type. So no. Who knows? I mean, it's kind of thought that he lived in this town for a little, Colville, this town for a little while. The same time this 12-year-old girl lived there and she disappeared while she was waiting for a ride to church. So her remains were found a year later by a river. So he never said anything about this, but it is rumored that he might have killed this little girl.
Yeah.
So, and then there's another one. There, Deborah Feldman, she was 49. She was a sex worker and an addict who disappeared in 2009. And everybody's pretty sure that he picked her up, kidnapped her, murdered her. He actually was shown a picture of her by investigators. And he said, I'm not ready to talk about that one.
Oh my God.
And he just they never found her. They never, no. He's like, I just don't want to talk about that one.
He's such a piece of shit.
He's a piece of shit. So, this I kind of found this part funny in a weird, sick way. Like, so he did travel to Canada as well as all over the United States, but he was in Canada a fair amount. And when the investigators asked if he ever killed in Canada, he replied, Canadians don't count.
Oh.
So I'm not sure if that means he killed a shit ton of Canadians or that he never killed a Canadian. I like to think he didn't kill anybody in Canada because they're good people up there.
Hey, yeah.
Or he killed a bunch because they don't count. I don't know. That was just the craziest thing.
I don't know. That's like one of the cryptic bullshit things that he says.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. Because he never gave him really any information. So
Canadians I kill all the time. Or maybe I don't. let's talk about his laugh for a second.
Oh my God. Chilling. Bone chilling. And annoying.
It's annoying as fuck. It's very, oh my God. It's super. And he laughs at the worst shit. The worst. He laughs at himself. He laughs at his own jokes.
Well, yeah, he's a narcissistic psychopath. Like, he's so amused by himself, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's
just enrages me.
It does me, too. There were a lot of things with, like, just him talking that I had to turn off because I couldn't stand just his face or his voice or his laugh or anything he had to say. He is very unsettling.
Yes.
So
I will say
it. Yes, he is super creepy. And in December of 2012, he had already been in custody for 8 months. He was pulling the same shit, you know, cat and mouse. Finally, he agrees to cooperate and, you know, give them what they want if they again set a date for his execution. And he said, if not, he will kill himself. So you can't just say, like, I want an execution and then they execute you the next day. It doesn't work like that. You got to go through a trial. Even if you plead guilty, there's still a trial for your sentencing.
A long trial.
You can't just be like, well, just kill me now.
He had like a child's mentality of what the court system's like.
Yeah.
He thought that, you know, once you got caught, you're hung.
No. Nah.
It's not like that. You're in jail for a long, long time.
Yeah, and even if you do get convicted and get the death penalty, you're still on death row for years and years and years and years. So,
yep.
He's an idiot. Anyway, he said, I can't be satisfied sitting in prison for all my life. I'd rather go out while I still have some sanity and good memories, he said, laughing. Ugh. Good memories. Gross.
Yeah.
But he kept good on his promise of suicide. And on December 2nd of 2012, they find him dead in his prison cell. So he had actually slit his wrists and strangled himself with a bed sheet. And I'm so mad because he was given a razor and they just forgot to get it back to him from him.
Well, I was told that it was, you know, like they don't know where he got it from, but anybody can get anything from in a jail.
That's true. That's true. But, you know, I mean, he got the final word and who knows how many people he killed. And it's very unlikely now that they'll ever be solved.
No. And he would he had milk cartons in his jail cell for whenever he cut his wrist. He would fill up the jugs with blood so that he wouldn't leave a pool for everybody to see so that they wouldn't find him soon. Too soon.
And revive him.
Yeah, see, he thinks of everything.
I did not find that. That is crazy.
Isn't it?
Wow. So they never really got a complete analysis on this guy before he died. I mean, the profile was incomplete.
They were just getting started. He promised them everything. Yeah. And then he kills himself.
I mean, they know he's a loner. He didn't have a pattern. His victims varied in age and sex and location, obviously. So yeah. he did leave behind this suicide poem thing, and I did skim over it. I'm not reading any part of it because I think he would fucking love that. And
you think?
Are you there?
Where would you go, you clever little worm, if you bleed your host dry? Back in your ride, the night is still young. Streetlights, it's just bullshit.
It is bullshit. It's all bullshit. It's crazy.
It's terrible. It goes on way too long, and it's like the worst Limp Bizkit song you've ever heard.
It's really bad. And I mean, I'm not gonna, you know, that was a little taste. Google it if you want. It's all there.
Yeah, that's what I do.
I just didn't give a shit. And I really thought he'd be like, oh, people are taking my words. It's like, no, nobody gives a shit about you.
So that's how it starts. And that's enough.
Yeah, that is how it starts. And then I read a little bit more and I'm like, I'm not even going to bother. So, so, you know, he died with a lot of secrets. He took a lot of information, possibly about other murders, to the grave. I mean, there's still so many people missing out there that could potentially be tied to Israel Keyes. So that's sad.
Who knows how many cold cases could have been solved?
I know. And I just want to put this out there. Like, if you happen to have any information regarding this case, you can call 1-800-CALL-FBI, and that would be great, because I'm sure there are a lot of people that he killed.
Need some closure.
Right. That family needs some closure. I mean, I don't know who could be listening that would know anything about it, but if you do, there's the phone number. So.
Yeah,
that is Israel Keyes
in a nutshell
for sure. Like, there is so much more on this dude, but I'm tired. I've been living Israel Keyes for a few days now, and I'm just like, I'm ready to put him to rest.
I agree. I'm ready to delve into the next topic, which I'm not sure what it will be, but it will be pretty soon.
Very soon. It'll be good. So definitely keep listening. Join us for that. I'm sure we'll share that once it's
deadly
done.
Deadly cereal.
Deadly cereal. We got a new name.
Deadly cereal.
Because we're deadly cereal. It's actually like a play on our names, but
cereal actually means story. So it's like,
yeah, it's got so story. Many layers and meanings to the name. Like,
and it's also like a serial killer.
It's deep.
Yeah, let's just say that.
It's deep.
And it's original. And don't try to steal it, because we already got the handle for it.
Right. We already bought a website.
Yep.
That's how confident we are, okay?
Hell yeah. Tell your friends.
All right. That's enough.
Love you guys.
Thank you guys. Please stay safe, and we will catch you next.